Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Okay, here we go again, Dr. Drew. Here we go again.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Shelley's still with us? This is actually Shelley's podcast, but I asked Craig to come step into this one because he had the fundamental question of all time, or of the universe, or of the nature of being. What was that? This sounded like an important question.
We have to recap what we were talking about.
Go ahead, please. Yes.
So, borderline personality disorder.
Okay. We were trying to protect your wife a little bit from
ex-wife
from being labeled, and there were borderline things we were
talking about. Listen, let's just do a synopsis. The only reason why there's these specific things is for billing. The DSM was designed for billing.
No.
That's what it was.
No.
Let's get an argument.
Bob, no. It was It came out of the fact that psychiatry
was kooky.
It was sort of dynamically based, and it wanted to become a medical science. And medical science is based on
because it wanted to get paid for it.
No, there's no discussion about it. It was used
this
for
was
that.
Before
much
they
the
got
way
paid.
The ASIM criteria were used for that, but this was something where professionals were getting together trying to find constellation of symptoms that had a common biological basis that you could attach a diagnostic construct to, so you could begin to develop a clinical science called psychiatry.
Did I show you the thing that we found? Horosti and I found it in the basement of Las Encinas, a 1936 diagnostic sheet. Mm-hmm. It was you could be admitted to a psychiatric hospital for melancholia, for female troubles. Mm-hmm. Whatever that is,
you know
what I mean?
That's
so
hysteria.
They had to get more scientific than that.
Yeah, well,
as the 20th century rolled on,
right? But then originally it was sort of dynamically based, like what's psychologically based, like what are the dynamics going on in this individual's? And there was a mind brain dualism where you know the brain was sort of probably has something to do with what's going on here, but you know, and now that's all getting worked out, and so we'll have one day very specific biology attached to these diagnostics.
But personality
labels.
Is not biology, or you
yes,
gonna
it is.
You believe it's going to be.
Oh yeah, but it's complex. It's very 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 complicated, and everything's biology. But I think that the future is we've been through these multiple decades of the brain. The future is how the autonomic system and how the brain's feelings are embedded in the body, and a lot of that is personality stuff.
But here's
how we regulate feelings.
Do you know Michael Gilmore?
No.
The writer?
No.
The Rolling Stone writer? His brother was Gary Gilmore. Their mother was a prostitute. Mm. They grew up in the same hotel rooms watching her have sex with tricks, drug addict, craziness, whatever.
Times,
they both grew up in the same life. The brother, Gary, becomes a sociopath, serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's one of the sweetest, most gentle, wonderful people I've ever... He was my boss for a while. How do you explain that?
Genetics, biology.
And also out of the construct could be the compensation.
Resiliency. Yeah, certain people have just resiliency, and certain people have sentinel moments. I mean, it's all...
But we keep saying this childhood event created this personality, which created your addiction.
Well,
we say it contributed, but we don't say it caused it.
Yeah, we say we're a little too deterministic in you know, how we talk about it in our common sort of discourse. The fact is plenty of people have trauma and do fine with it.
There's also an element that I don't think you discuss much, or maybe you're against it, is the spiritual element.
No, I'm not against it at all. I've always felt inadequate to talk about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I feel
I thought you had arguments against it.
No, I'm an enthusiast.
Really?
Bob and I talk about it, but I
just believe that we're a spirit coming through and we're supposed to be learning these things.
Gilmore's
brother had to learn one thing and he had to learn another, and we all have to. It doesn't matter
book.
How you're brought up.
Great book called Shot Through the Heart, Shot in the Heart,
yeah.
That Michael wrote about his brother's whole series of things. And at that time, in the 70s, late 70s, it was all environment dictates what happens.
Right, then it went to it's all genetics. We went through a period when I was in training where it was only genetics. I remember I was
so talking, nobody could be a, you could only be genetically predisposed to be a sociopath.
Well, I remember I was talking to a psychiatrist with some of the early cases I got involved with the Las Encinas in the drug unit. I remember I ran to a psychiatrist, the same psychiatrist over at Huntington, at the hospital nearby here in Pasadena, and I went, what is that? These two girls, they're severe borderlines. And he goes, oh, well, he went on to describe what the genetics was and what the biology is. And he goes, that's all. And I went, well, what about the dad that used to beat them? Is that anything to do with them? No, mm-hmm. No, it's just, you know, certain genetic proclivities. And here are the gene factor. And I was like, oh, okay, well, funny that they all seem to have this crazy history. But okay.
Right, so two history. Siblings can have the same trauma, and the biology will accept the trauma differently and create something different.
Lately, what I'm fascinated with, the answer to your question is yes. However, there is something that intervenes between the genetics of the individual and the environment, and that's attachment. And that's where the spiritual piece, that's where things are moving around amongst us, how we attach to other people and what that attachment mechanism is very much determines some of our ability to heal and our ability to be resilient in the face of maybe where our genetics are deficient, a stable attachment can fill in.
Well, the other thing is
that nobody here at this table, at this couch, had stable attachments. None of us.
Well, how can you tell anybody?
I know everybody's history.
Did anybody? Yes. Because now
they're not very interesting. People have dealt with very uninteresting
right
to all
now,
of us.
But what Craig said in the last podcast, we're trying to overdo it, and we're forming.
Yeah.
Too attached. We're not detaching.
That's not attachment.
From our children?
That's not.
That we helicopter over and hover and protect until they're 35 years old?
It's dependency. Yeah.
Right.
And there's a dependency, but you're depending on them to make you happy because of your old wounds.
Yes.
But that's what I'm trying to say.
That's what's happening to this generation of millennials.
They're getting our old wounds transferred onto them and us overcompensating.
That always happens. Every generation does that.
But it's a generational thing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many narcissistic parents that I talk to my friends, and there's so many narcissists that their parents are. And, you know, as much as my kids might accuse me of this or that, the other thing is I don't think that's one of them, is they're not going to say when they're grown up and going to therapy, which I'm sure they're headed for.
Cursing you. Cursing your damn Paul Lynde impressions.
I believe, and they're right here, I believe that they're going to be in therapy going, my father with the I love yous. Oh, I couldn't stand
God.
He loved me so much. He coached 9 teams. It was like, enough already. Dad, you stink at football. I don't even know what you were trying to do. I mean, so I think it's going to be something like that, as opposed to me going, my dad never showed up and never had one catch with him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be the polar opposite.
Yeah,
but they'll have their own issues. But I just think where these spirits that are going through. Listen, I have 4 children, every one of them out of the gate. From the moment they were born, instant personality. There was a difference in their personalities.
And that's the genetics, we would argue.
Yeah. So. I mean, but it's also a spirit,
or whatever.
Spirit coming through, passing through. You all got lessons to learn. I mean, these two children that are here right now, Justin and Jared with me, they have the same, you know, mom and dad, and yet they both have different experiences on how they're dealing with some of these traumas.
So what's this question that you were going to ask us last
time? All right, the fundamental question in dealing with someone who's borderline, if you have children with them, there are literal, factual, you know, issues that come up that you have to take care of. What happens when they come up with an accusation? What do you do about that? You can't ignore it because
I'm sorry
then
you
it can
feel that way.
No.
Or
that's
a distortion.
What about that's out of a book, Bob.
You mean a distortion? Too.
A distortion
like
to the point where
something
it's
different.
Distorted to police. It's distorted to lawyers,
right.
Friends, family members. Yeah. Do you just sit there and take it, which I do many times, or do you fight back and say something? That's my fundamental question. Go.
I'm going to back Justin up, your son, and say, don't say anything. That's what he's complaining
about.
But
you have to because you have to.
Nope.
Well, hold on.
But.
What?
Engagement.
Well, think about what we do with patients that are like this. Let's tell you what Shelley and Bob and I do.
The same answer every time.
Well, first of all,
consistency.
All three of us have to say the same thing at all times and have to know one another so well that we know that we're not going to all get spun out by whatever that person is saying.
Okay.
So you need sort of a unified front, and your kids sound like they're very much in that zone. Number one. Number two, document the shit out of everything.
Yeah.
You need evidence all the time because reality begs no issue. Because they're not, if somebody's really borderline, Shelley, back me up on this, they're not really, their memory systems are distorted. They
remember things differently. There's shorthand in treatment. I just said it last Friday at a treatment center I work at. I said to the program director, dot your I's and cross your T's. And I leaned over towards the one. Meaning everybody knows that shorthand is like, that person is going to cause us trouble.
So make sure you document. Whether we, even if you're just, even
that's
if you're just
code for just, borderline.
Yeah, just keep a little dictaphone going. Here's what happened. Yeah. What you say in court.
By the way, how old are you that you're not using an iPhone? You're using a dictaphone?
Or whatever. No, well, I was thinking about my iPhone. You know why I thought about
really?
That?
Really, Drew?
I tried with the iPhone a couple times.
Did your secretary get you a Manhattan?
No, here's the difference.
It shuts off.
The iPhone, if you, it misses stuff or improperly records stuff. So I like just get the recording.
On the dictaphone. I got you.
Get it down.
But it's really just good boundary, consistent. Don't try to solve their problems.
Okay,
that's
you guys
thing.
Are in, okay. I'm going to tell you once again. This is a little airy fairy. I'm going to give you an exact example, and you tell me what you would have.
Okay,
done.
And then you're getting out of here. We're going to do a show.
All right. Okay. All right. Jared.
Yeah.
Supposed to be with me.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to get a hold of them. They're both hanging up on me because he says I'm not coming back to your house. Okay. She had gone to the police. She made up stories. She convinced them that I'm abusive. Blah blah blah. He actually believes it. And not coming back to my house. Okay. Now, what do you do?
Okay.
Boom,
I
go.
Understand.
You ignore it?
I just ignore her and talk to him.
No,
I ignore her.
Now she convinces him not to talk to me.
I say,
convinces him how to hang up on his dad.
I say, I understand, and I hear you, and I'm sorry you're in the middle of this, and you know, I'm sure we'll figure something out, and you detach.
Let it go. Just let him move
in. It's only going to be let go for 48 hours if I know anything. All of a sudden, she's going to be nice and like, oh, and one of the.
No, then you'll be in court, and now you're in court. I forgot that.
What
part.
Do you think of that?
Wanting
what do you
100%
think of the
custody.
I said?
Wanting 100. But now you're not
so
understanding.
Craig,
so now,
the only one
now you get here. Now you get a lawyer that says you're going to court tomorrow, which also happened. 100% custody to her. So you're just going to go, yeah, let it go.
No, you
let
got go. You go. Look, here's all the documents.
That's not happening today. Today, I want to love and support my son. Today, we live to fight another day.
Yeah.
Okay, I hear you. And I'm so sorry you're going through this. And I'm sure we'll talk soon. And boom. Because what the borderline wants is engagement.
Yes,
they want the seven-page
They want to go to
seven
court.
Page
they want that
email.
That's
but
who makes us go to court.
Shelley
is over $1 million.
Shelley is going to take the floor now. But, I defer to Ms. Spray.
But at the same time, we have to understand that this happens to people over and over and over. And what I notice with borderline sometimes is that when you don't react and you are loving and compassionate, they spin
gears.
Fully
oh,
out
yeah.
of control
oh,
and
yeah.
take it farther.
Yes, they
in
do.
To
exactly.
their
right.
pathology
yes, they can.
And that is something that is I feel that is the scariest part
but
love and compassion
saying, Bob isn't saying to deal with her with love and compassion deal with your son with love and
well,
compassion
of course
deal I mean, with her with a firm boundary and document everything and live to fight another day if you fight the fight must be a
no,
full scale
but
atomic
I'm not
assault mm. you don't fight little bad you have
you
to
still
fight
won't win.
You
but I'm
yeah.
not saying
no,
I'm
no
not I'm not I'm not saying that they fighting. Should that yeah. it, that you should fight or yeah, any of that. But what I have noticed in a lot of work that I've done is that it's very flexible. You have to be extremely flexible. If they start to go farther, you have to just pull back and just try to get some love and compassion.
Give them an example what you mean by
love
that, because I don't think people understand what that is.
Well, if someone, say, is accusing you of something, because this happens all the time, I'm accusing you of this. And you
Shelley, you said I shouldn't take my medication yesterday. I heard you say it. You told me not to.
Or
so I told the doctor that you told me not to take my medication.
You're trying to kill me.
Good
no,
one,
I've seen
by the
this
way.
Happen yeah. to Shelley.
Good one.
I've seen
flat
a borderline.
Out line, right?
I've seen a borderline accuse Shelley of telling her not to take her drug Oof. And that's going to kill her.
Yeah.
Remember the girl at PRC?
Yeah. Oh, anyway, uh-huh. So keep going.
Right? You
right.
never said that.
Right.
You said those drugs are drugs of addiction.
Yeah.
Right? then right. all of a sudden you're trying to kill the person.
Yeah, they definitely don't pick up on nuance, but go ahead.
And so in that regard, you just, it's very factual. You just have to stick to the facts.
Yeah, stay with
just
the facts.
The facts.
Keep your feet on the ground.
And the emotionality of it, because, you know, I have an ex-husband and, you know, we have custody and, you know, we have that stuff going on. And he used to really, like, get really up in it emotionally. And I had to stop with engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I had to stop. And court is where you have to defer to your attorneys. And
I go without, by the way,
in
the judge
real
hates
time.
Me.
In the
go
real
without?
Time.
Because I
here's,
overtalk.
Not here's another thing.
Not
here's
engaging.
We talk too much.
Here's another thing about this stuff. I'm pessimistic that people get better. I think when you're in a 12-step world, you tend to be too optimistic that people get better.
Because we see people get better.
And I feel better.
Yeah. But I mean, most people don't get that much better.
No, or if they do, they don't sustain it. That's
I will tell you one thing, and I will leave you at this.
Okay.
This is the experience, strength, and hope. This is the hope part of it. I have had wonderful experiences in taking care of things myself and being accountable because I created this. Whatever the angst, whatever the fight, the conflict, I'm 100% responsible. And that was one great lesson I learned.
Good.
And it's one day, I had the court. I said, I'm removing the restraining orders, blah, 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 if we both write mutual apologies before the court. And I'm not exaggerating. I wrote 13 pages. It flowed out of me. Not one word of, if you did this, I wouldn't have done this. Nothing. It was all about me and how I was responsible and accountable. My lawyer says, that's it. I'll read this, but that's the end of it. You know, you see the world through rose-colored glasses. Says, you don't know what it's like to suffer through this. I said, so just read it. She reads it. The court was closed. Every single person at court was bawling, crying at this confession of this man who just wants what's best for his children. And even the judge apologized after that. He goes, I want to say I'm sorry for my demeanor. I just want what's great for your children. So that can also happen in the change of life, is as long as we're accountable, make amends where possible, apologize, and look for your part to be 100% responsible.
Right. That, I think look for your part answer. Is a great piece of advice.
Yeah. But, there you go.
All right. We're now switching to Shelley, but we're going to go to a call.
Okay.
Call?
Our caller. Call your name.
All righty.
This is...
So,
give us your name.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Sorry.
Can't hear it.
So it wasn't that long ago. I am a recovering opiate addict and have been on Suboxone now for some time. And it wasn't that long ago that I've heard you say it multiple times that there are no Suboxone success stories.
Nope, no, not me. I've never said that. I've said I've never seen any Suboxone success stories. And but I know it saves lives here and there. I just never see sustained Suboxone success stories.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted, part of what I want to ask you about, because, you know, for someone like me, you know, a lot of my introduction to just what treatment was about was really through watching you all and listening to you on the radio. So, you know, when you guys make statements or assertions about recovery and how to get better, you know, I take it to heart. And so I'm curious to know whether or not you believe that being on Suboxone kind of makes it like it's not a success. Because let me just kind of give you an idea. I went from taking 45 to 60, 10 milligram Norcos a day. The only reason why I didn't take more is because I couldn't afford it.
How's your hearing?
My hearing is actually okay, good. Surprisingly.
Yeah, good.
I was also at the same time doing about 4 grams of blow, of course, smoking weed and drinking the whole time too. Really decided to go get healthy because of watching Celebrity Rehab, as a matter of fact. Went into a program, and the program was, in my opinion, pretty bad. I stayed there for about 3 weeks and left, struggled on my own for a little while, and knew about Suboxone, was not a fan of it because of what I'd heard you all say, but I had an opportunity to take a job, and I knew that if I at least got on the Suboxone that I could have a chance at, you know, getting the rest of my life together, which was about 3 years ago. Before I started trying to get sober, I'd blown about $100,000 in a year. I was completely broke, lost my house, had to move in with my mother. And since that time, because I was on Suboxone, I've been able to completely rebuild every part of my life and have success. And I, you know, in my mind, as long as I could get a life back in order, then getting off whatever it was would be much more attainable. Because part of what was so bad was the desperation of trying to get better and having nothing going on. So I'm down to about, I started off 8 milligrams a day. I'm down to 1 milligram a day and tapering down by 25% about every 7 to 10 days. I expect to be off of it soon, but, you know, I'm curious what you think about that. Do you think that I'm just fooling myself up to this point?
No. I don't think so. But are you doing 12-step stuff?
I do. I don't go to meetings. I go to therapy, okay. And I have an active social life again. But I do not go to meetings per se. I didn't have a very good experience with those.
Do you drink?
I do not drink.
So no other stuff. Go ahead.
I haven't had. You know, that was kind of the amazing thing about it was that the opiates were really the only thing that I wanted.
Yeah. That takes over. Yeah, it takes over. Yeah, but what the my fear, one of the things I always see in Suboxone users is they start, other stuff starts leaking in. Alcohol, pots,
benzos.
Do they have you on anything else besides the Suboxone?
I'm not.
Good.
And at one time when I left and was trying to go to just psychiatrists and whatnot, I mean, I was on Wellbutrin, Seroquel. They gave me Klonopin, which kind of blew my mind.
Terrible.
That they would give me such a strong narcotic.
Oh, we got to talk about Shelley's Klonopin or Xanax history.
That's got to be one of the worst.
Yeah.
One of the worst drugs that I ever took. And getting off of it was an absolute nightmare.
Yep.
But you know, the Suboxone again. I do believe that doctors are extremely irresponsible with it, because I am not in any way saying that Suboxone is a miracle drug. It's not. It's just it was just one more path for me to try to get, you know, because I don't have any support. I'm kind of on an island. You know, if it doesn't work out for me, no one's going to pick me up. So this seemed like the best way to do it, and I feel like it's worked so far.
Well, I've always said that people that don't have support, don't have resources, have failed multiple treatments, for sure, could save their life. And I get what I've always registered my concern with is I get to see any long-term Suboxone successes, but now I can say I have. And call us back, let us know what it's like when you get off it, because that'll be interesting.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Drew. I've got one more question. I've heard you many times talk about how that tapering is BS. And do you believe, is it that biologically it just does not work? Or do you say that all the time? Because usually for an addict, I get what you're saying, because I try to taper off Norco.
I think I can clarify. I think what he usually says is doing tapering at home, which is what the Suboxone recommendation always is hard, because you're going to be sick and you're going to have cravings, and what are you going to do? So the idea is
if he doesn't
go into a
good
hospital to get up from one to zero.
But what we have experienced is that eventually everyone who's tapering reaches a point where they develop withdrawal. They just develop full-blown withdrawal. And I don't know if it's at 1 milligram or half milligram or 8 milligram, but people eventually – typically, at least in almost
can I just tell you what I see? So people do it exactly what he's describing.
Yeah,
they got a great job, they love their life,
and
they're dope sick.
Well, maybe he won't
have any support,
but maybe he won't be. Maybe he'll be all right. He seems fine now. Yeah, again, it's working for you. Listen, I think one of the great errors is to sort of try to be too one size fits all with these things. I mean, it's working for you, you know, this, and we have concerns about, I mean, if we were evaluating, we'd be like, oh, we worry about this. We worry about all kinds of things for our patients. You know, we'd worry you're not doing meetings. We worry you don't have more social support.
We're actually selling something different than that. I'm selling the thing that I think you're trying to sell, which is thriving.
Yeah. Right? We want people to thrive,
to
not
me,
just to not use.
Replacement therapy is not thriving.
Yeah,
it's
but
just,
it is for him. It is for him, right?
But it ain't over yet.
I agree with that.
I don't know that he shouldn't stay on a little tiny bit of it for a long period of time. What difference does it make?
And
how
old are you? Because when I go on my rants, it's about 19 and 20 and 22-year-old kids getting on it. That's my rant. if you've ever been affected by
He's
my
43.
And He's when 40. And you started 3 years ago?
The drugs?
No, Suboxone.
Suboxone.
The Suboxone was 3 years ago, correct.
Okay. So you were 40 years old when you started.
See, that's correct. About the right age. Yeah.
That's well, correct. That's what makes more sense.
Little
to
young.
Me,
is 50 that, is better. But.
Right. Is that you had a lot of maturity, even though you were an addict and you were using massive amounts of drugs, is that you were older and your brain, right. even though you were using drugs, you had developed through your 20s.
Yeah.
And so your brain was in better shape to get on a Suboxone and take it responsibly, be responsible to see your doctor, get a job, and do all those adult things.
19-year-olds don't do that.
So what
no,
we're
I
seeing,
agree with that.
You know, so I have seen it work in seldom cases where someone is older and has this level of responsibility for themselves, and they can take the Suboxone as prescribed, and they don't use on top of it, and they don't do those things.
Right.
So, you know, I have seen that work. But again, like, we don't know what's going to happen when you completely come off of it.
And maybe he shouldn't. Guys, you don't put a value judgment.
No.
He's thriving without coming off
can
of
I,
it.
So. Can I ask ahead, a question Craig. Or make a comment?
Absolutely.
I'm wondering what the resistance is to working a program which deprograms some of
when
these.
You're on, I can tell
some,
you when you're
these,
on Suboxone,
some of these compulsions that are going on. Because what I've found in working a program is there are no bad side effects ever. There's no question of bad side effects. There's not
anger,
even a debate.
Anger.
There's not
anger,
even a debate.
Anger is a side effect.
It's a side effect that you have the tools to take care of. You have the tool. Every single tool is at your disposal. But to me is we all go for these numbing agents, you know, whether it's gambling, whether it's sex, whatever it is. It's like, so we have this compulsion to do so. I have to deprogram that on a daily basis, which is why I do still go to these meetings and still sponsor people, be of service, work steps, go to a higher power.
I listened to a lecture
if I didn't
day.
Have
I
any
to
of
lecture
that.
Day that the health care, the benefits to health care cost right now are estimated to be $150 per NA meeting. So mm-hmm. per participant per meeting, $150.
What does that mean?
It means if you attend, in terms of impact on healthcare expense, just you attending a meeting is worth $150 to the healthcare system.
Oh,
that's how effective it is.
Also, where are you from, sir?
I'm in Texas now. I'm in Houston.
Okay.
Houston. So,
I never got the caller's name. I'm sorry. What is your name?
George.
Okay, George. I'm sorry.
So I see this all the time, which is, I disagree with you, Craig. I think if you're on Suboxone, you should not go to 12 steps. But your goal, when you get off Suboxone, he should go in a detox, and then begin the program.
Right.
And
right.
that works. I've done it 4 times. It's worked every time. But this going to meetings on Suboxone, it's not welcomed with
right.
love and tolerance.
So
let me tell you something, because it challenges the addicts in AA. Why can't I be on it?
I know. It causes
it
splitting.
Creates
I know.
Emotion.
All right. So we gotta wrap George's call up. George, I am so glad you called, because first of all, I'd love to see a success. I always knew they were out there, and so thank you for being somebody that
they're
I can
always
bear with.
40 or 50.
Okay, I didn't know that really myself until just now, and that's an interesting wrinkle in this. Let me restate my position, because it gives me a chance to do that, which is that there's no doubt in my mind this stuff saves life. The question is, at what cost? And because we're interested in thriving, as Bob said, we're worried that it keeps people chronically ill, because that's usually what we see. And particularly, you know, more often than not, clonopin is prescribed with the Suboxone and blah, blah, blah. And thank God you had terrible experiences with the benzodiazepine, so you didn't fall for that trap. But listen, my friend, mm-hmm. call us back when you've gotten off everything, and let's talk to us about what that experience is like. And really, one of the decisions for you is whether you do get off it. Maybe you don't.
I will.
I'll
let you know. And I just have to tell you, Drew, I hope you do realize the impact that you and Bob and Shelley, too, that you guys have on people that you don't even know, because I really don't think I would have ever tried to get sober when I did had it not been for you guys. So I appreciate it.
George, God bless. Thank
you. We appreciate you. We appreciate the call, man. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, we got to take a little break. Be right back. We're welcoming our new sponsor to the show. They are called Bergamet Mega Plus, and this is actually a supplement, and it's a supplement I can get behind. For the next couple of months, I'll be reporting on some of the benefits of this thing. What it is, it's derived from some of the extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. It's endemic to the Calabria region of Italy. And bergamot is rich in what's called polyphenols, and polyphenols are known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government actually funded a bunch of research on this. Now, Bergamet Mega Plus is a natural, what you would call statin, or in scientific terms, HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor, much like the medication that we take, but milder, and again, it's a natural source. It has properties that also may lower triglyceride, raise HDL, even more so than a statin. So if you have high cholesterol or lipid issues and you can't tolerate statins, this is something you might really consider. Also, for others, in a nutshell, Bergamet Mega Plus can address conditions faced by millions of Americans worldwide, namely increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, and high blood pressure. Taken together, that is called the metabolic syndrome. And usually physicians will prescribe pharmaceutical agents, weight loss, that kind of thing. And in this case, Bergamet Mega Plus may offer benefits above and beyond the usual recommendations. Be sure to talk to your doctor. Cardiologists, physicians all over the world have been recommending this product, Bergamet Mega Plus. Its effectiveness has been documented in many scientific peer-reviewed publications. And as I said, as a result, it's something that I can get behind. I'm excited about. I'm starting to recommend it to patients. So to learn more, visit bergamet.com. That is B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T.com. Or click on the Bergamet banner on our website. We are back, and we have another caller. And is it Ed or Edwin?
Eddie.
Eddie, and you had a question for us. Go right ahead.
Well, I've got a buddy staying with me right now, and he's 33, and he's been an alcoholic for about 12 years. And it's just been increasingly getting worse and worse, and he's been to rehab. He's been to six county programs, and he keeps leaving and falling back into the same patterns. And
Eddie, hold on. I'm going to tell you that I was listening to another lecture today where they showed some data, Bob. You'll appreciate this. That takes, on average, 5 years. No, I'm sorry, 8 years. Four or five treatments on average to get 1 year of sustained sobriety.
I believe that. Yeah.
So it's 8 years, four to five treatments on average to get 1 year. And before your risk of relapse drops down to 15%, which is the rate in the population that addiction normally occurs, it takes 5 years of sustained sobriety before your risk of relapse starts
drops
to really
down.
Drop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Eddie, how long were these treatments?
He's only been going to like 30, 60, 90-day programs,
that's
which I don't think is long enough.
No, it isn't, but it's not so bad. And does he go to meetings when he gets out?
No, he does. Yeah, he does sometimes. But it's usually sometimes, only two or three months he stays clean before he starts drinking again. And right. He was just recently in a program, and he packed up his backpack and left. And he's homeless. He's living on the street. He had nowhere to go. He lives in San Jose, so he took a bus down to my house to stay with me. I live in Los Angeles.
Was he getting medication?
No meds.
Because it sounds like maybe I always wonder if somebody had sabotaged his recovery. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't want to solve people's problems. We don't know these people. You know what I mean? Just like general ideas, but I think we get too particular. You know what I mean?
So what do you do with Eddie?
Well, why is the friend staying at his house?
He's homeless and he cares about him.
Now, go to an Al-Anon meeting. You know, I hate to sound rude, but I mean, it's really hard when you want. I'll just talk for myself. When I want somebody to be sober more than they do, they will never be sober. A warning sign is when the person trying to help the person is calling and not the person who wants the help. The prior caller was the person who wanted the help.
Yeah.
Now we have this phenomenon in America where parents in particular, and I'm not talking about the caller in general, parents in particular want their children to be sober. Their children have no desire to be sober.
Yeah.
They spend millions of dollars on a child that has no intention of being sober. And then the question is, what do you tell them?
Well, what does Eddie do when he's fearful his friend's going to die? Or he's going to end up on the streets and going to get sick and he's really in desperate straits? You're what?
My biggest concern right now is that he's going to drink himself to death.
Yeah,
let's be more specific. Is your basic concern is what is a good friend supposed to do? Right.
Well, that's what I'm conflicted with. That's what I'm conflicted with right now too. Am I helping him by letting him stay at my place, or am I not helping him?
you may be keeping him alive, but you're not helping him, if that makes any sense. But
I know that but here it's a really tough spot you're in, and I understand, and it's so painful. And now you've gotten yourself into it, so you got to figure out how to get yourself out of it. I would suggest.
I think he's far. Al-Anon's a great piece of advice,
but he needs to get the guy back to help, and then say you can't come back to my house.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And so what I would do, there's Salvation Army has great programs. They're hard to get the beds, but you could put the legwork.
County
in.
Programs. Where are you located in the United States?
Los Angeles. He's out here.
Oh. Call Tarzana.
I'm in Los Angeles.
Call Tarzana Treatment Center right now. You can call them 24 hours a day, and they have a waiting list there. Yeah. You can go and wait in the lobby.
What about Cry Help?
Cry Help's harder.
Hard.
Okay.
But Tarzana is the one. They have the BHS county contract.
What about Salvation Army?
I like Salvation Army, but you got to test clean coming in the door. Rena B, also downtown Los Angeles.
Okay, so Rena B, Salvation Army, Tarzana Treatment Center.
Those are all county.
But you can call Tarzana Treatment Center right now.
Yeah, but Tarzana will have him out pretty quick, though, right?
No, they got lots of different programs.
But he needs to have him be
away
in a
place.
Program,
yeah.
You got to get him into a place, and that's basically all we can do. Like, that's leading the horse to water, and then living with us, and us loaning them money, and us, you know, helping them all along the way.
It doesn't really do it.
I know it's such a, like, I would say pick somebody. You know, really disadvantaged. I always say, if you want to put your energies towards something to help people, go help children in the inner city. Go to my friend's place on Hollywood Boulevard.
He just wants his friend to get his
He's a helper.
Not die. I know. He wants his friend not to die, though.
He doesn't have say over whether his friend dies or not. He doesn't.
He doesn't, but he's in a spot, and he's probably not used to it.
Right.
We do this all day. We are really used to, you know, seeing these people. We're really used to assessing them. So maybe he's just a little bit more scared.
Please take our, Eddie? Eddie, Salvation Army, Raina B., Tarzana.
Why are you not Tarzana Treatment Lead One?
I did.
It's the best one, Drew.
You can go and wait in the lobby all day and night. I like Tarzana Treatment Center a lot. The reason my head is doing that is I'm trying to look for a place that he can stay a year.
Salvation Army.
You'd have to go to Tarzana, get clean, and go to Salvation Army.
Okay, well, that's in my head. Salvation Army is the place. So
that's exactly what I think he needs. I think he needs at least a year of treatment.
Long term.
Yeah,
man.
So that's Salvation Army. So if you can get him there, work
on
that.
My gut tells me he's not going to stay for a year.
Well, whatever. That's not Eddie's problem, and that's not our problem. we're advocating.
When everybody was telling me to go for a year, I never would go. But then you go to jail for a year. That's possible.
Yeah, that's not possible.
Yeah, but if you add up all your rehabs, they equal to a year probably.
A year and 4 months, actually.
A year and 4 months. Thank you.
All right, hey, we got to go, buddy. You get
here,
it? You get what we're telling
for
you?
Another hour.
You get what we're telling
you? Yeah,
okay.
I got it.
All right, my friend.
Yeah. Tarzana Treatment Center.
Right. Ben Salvation Army.
Yeah.
All right, so Shelley.
Yes.
We've been doing an awful lot of talk about borderline swirling around you.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that label at one point, did you not?
I did.
Explain.
She put it on herself.
I understand,
I've known
but it's
her my whole life. She's not that.
Why are you and I conflicting today? It's so weird.
No, I know that.
That's why I'm.
It was self-labeling. That's what I'm more.
It's Craig. Borderline's
more
in the room.
Oh,
they've been around you before. This is the first time that this group has been together.
I was more interested why she labeled herself that.
I did not that. I had traits that did not.
All drug addicts do.
Right.
Okay,
when they're using.
Of course. That's why I thought that I was, because when I was using and when I was getting clean and I was in the psych ward, obviously that's what they were saying to me.
No, you were my understanding of your story as we've reviewed it was that really particularly when you were in Xanax withdrawal, that's when you looked borderline, right?
Of course.
Because you look crazy.
Yes, I looked crazy.
Because Xanax withdrawal makes
I still
you,
look good, but I looked crazy.
But Xanax withdrawal makes people nuts.
Completely. I had a bad Valium habit from the bakery down the street.
Oh yeah.
Unfortunately.
Used to go there too.
From here?
No, of course
they
we both went.
Diazepam for $1 a pill. It was
from
the
here?
Greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Down the street from here?
No, not down the street.
Oh, I thought you were telling me something.
Hollywood.
She
in
did
Hollywood.
Look out the window.
I
like
know.
It was, I was going to go look out your windows. There's no stores out there.
No, I was no down there.
We were down there all the time.
$1 a pill, Drew.
Is that
they
good?
They sold them in a bakery. You could just buy like 40 of them.
Yep, on cards.
Those were the days,
El Salvadorian.
So you were on Valium for how long?
A couple of years.
And then how did the Xanax get going?
Well, that was just intermittent. I mean, I couldn't really afford that kind of
stuff. Oh, so you weren't being prescribed that?
No, no, no. I had gotten sober, and then I had a nervous breakdown, basically, and I ended up having to go to the psych ward in sobriety.
And that wasn't post-acute withdrawal?
It could have been post-acute withdrawal, but it was obviously some level of trauma that had come up after a year. So what happened is that I went in and, you know, it was a major depressive episode with psychotic features, but they put me on Klonopin.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, because I was very dysregulated, if you can imagine.
And you're an addict, so we got to give you some benzo.
So they gave me the Klonopin.
Do you know what the risk
well
of
other things?
There's a study. Again, I'm all jacked up on these studies I've been listening to and reading today.
I know.
35,000 Britons were studied. And looked at whether or not being on a benzodiazepine was an independent risk factor for death. And if you were on it, let me get it this way. If you're on a benzo and an opiate, your probability of death is 350 times what it should be. As opposed to if your cholesterol is twice what it should be, in the next 10 years you have a 40% risk. As opposed to a 350% risk from benzos. So
you're how an addict, did they study that?
It was retrospective.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
And so please, everybody, every time I say Prince was probably on a benzo, there's a reason I say that. Because that's the combo that makes people stop breathing. And it turns out the opiate and the benzo affect the respiratory system by different mechanisms. And it's really kind of hard to overdose on either one. Very hard to overdose on a benzo and not breathe. Kind of hard to do it with an opiate unless you're shooting it, getting enough in your system. But together, it's very easy. Very easy.
Well, ended up relapsing because they gave me the Klonopin.
Yes.
Perfect. And I clearly needed more than that every single hour.
They just didn't understand that?
They didn't realize that was going to happen.
I'm curious. Did someone diagnose you with borderline, or did you diagnose it? Was it self-diagnosed?
No, it was in the chart. I don't know if it was probably traits. I don't know exactly if it was. I'm sure it wasn't a borderline.
Benzo withdrawal people bounce off the walls.
Yeah.
But they borderlines like benzos.
I understand. And maybe you use some projective.
Borderlines need benzos. Come on now.
But maybe you were using some projective identification at that time and people are splitting and stuff. But that's addict stuff too.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's so hard to say,
here's another thing is she was very antisocial in that era
not as much
of
as
her
you.
Life. And you got labeled that way when you went into a rehab center. You did.
What did you do? Just
she
to, wouldn't follow the rules?
She had purple hair. She had a fuck you attitude. And that.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Oh yeah.
Why did they paint Shelly in the corner like that? It made her look like a mean person.
It was Nurse Ratched. Yeah, I remember that.
And Nurse Ratched was really truly horrible.
Yes.
I mean, she was a terrible nurse.
Yeah. Shelly's a great nurse.
She won an Oscar.
Was that Kathy Bates? Who did?
No, Louise Fletcher.
Louise Fletcher.
But I'll
never
have
to be heard from again. But still, she did win an Oscar for it. It was a hell of a part.
That was
so
a
you
great
could have won
part.
An Emmy.
I could have won an Emmy
if you weren't acting.
If
you were
acting. I was acting,
but you were not acting.
No, because
you're
I clearly
edited.
Can't do.
You're edited
acting.
So you got sober. You got it together. Go ahead.
Lots of therapy. I mean, the treatment for what I had in addition to. You know, antisocial and drug addiction was that I had a lot of trauma and I was completely unaware of the level of trauma that I had had
as all
a
trauma
child,
survivors are, right?
Had no idea. No
how did,
idea.
How did you get in touch with it?
Well, some situations that I put myself in.
Recreations.
That recreated
traumatic reenactments.
And then shot it straight through the ceiling.
But how did you, you must have been
Here
in
come
therapy.
The dogs.
You must have been in therapy at the time to identify
Wowie kazowie.
Yes, I was in therapy for several years.
But when you were in therapy, you were doing traumatic reenactments and the therapist, what, pointed that out to you?
Yes and no. I mean, I was in group therapy for intimacy issues. I was in group therapy for, you know, emotional dysregulation. I was in, you know, therapy. Yeah. I mean, the basis of my situation was that I was unaware of the trauma. And then when I recognized that, I had to really dig in there and get some trauma help.
And what'd you do? How'd you do that?
I
just talked about it or did you
yeah,
do specific talk, trauma therapy?
Talked
or?
About it. I did Reikian. Yeah. I did body work. Yeah. I did breathing. I did DBT in a sense, CBT.
So
know,
all everything. All,
I did everything.
What worked best?
Everything. What worked best? I think what worked best was the program and the. I don't know. I think it was the community and working the 12 steps and then getting really spiritual. I think spirituality really made a big difference. Meditation made a huge difference. I can't say enough about meditation.
So mindfulness stuff.
That had has completely transformed life.
Do you get involved? What's the guy's name that we talked to that does the...
Noah.
Noah. Mm-hmm. You work for Noah?
Uh-huh. I do. I know him. And actually this in the treatment center.
Buddhist space sort of.
Right.
What is it? Refuge Recovery. Refuge it's called Recovery. Refuge Recovery.
Yeah. Awesome. Very, very interesting.
Right. And I've read his books and I know him. And meditation actually has changed my life more than I believe probably anything at this point.
Getting old helps too.
Easy.
God. Older.
Drew, isn't that true though?
What?
Yes,
that,
getting older helps.
Getting older gives you more insight on a certain level.
Gives more insight. Also, your brain volume and brain mass sort of drops. You don't have as much tissue as irritable and active and stuff.
Literally, as I hit 50, I don't know if it's all the therapy
have
or
brain
the whatever.
There to act.
You don't have the energy to be irritable.
That's right.
It's just like, yeah.
That's why Suboxone works for 40 and 50 year old people. That's my theory, anyways.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are you a pusher for this stuff?
No.
I've never even heard of it before. I walk in here. I don't even know how to spell it.
It's everywhere.
And suddenly, I'm walking out of here thinking
God.
I need it.
How many young men?
I feel fantastic with my
life.
Wait,
I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Okay, what's that?
How many young men opiate addicts do you sponsor?
None.
Oh, okay.
None.
Why?
Because if it was three or four, I would say ask them if they're on Suboxone or Subutex.
I have
and
found.
Your mind will
they
go,
probably are.
Boom.
I have found that it is difficult to sponsor people that are.
That's why I say they shouldn't go until they're off.
That I do not do in my recovery process. So it's difficult. So I have to back off and say, okay, if that works for you, it's not my experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But I've known Shelly through this whole journey, Drew.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
About 10 years ago, during the TV show, it was very emotional during the TV show. I think that was the final trauma for her because she was being labeled something she wasn't. She was, and the antisocial part of all the production people telling her go in there and make him throw a fit and all that. That thing somehow. Somehow she came out the other side, and ever since then, it's been pretty golden. Last 5, 6, 7 years.
All right, we're going to take a little break
right?
here.
Yep. Yeah.
We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear more about what you're doing right now. So,
okay.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
I'm getting involved with the advisory board at an organization called HEAL, H-E-A-L, and they have an app. It's called HEAL app, H-E-A-L. And these guys promise a physician at your home within 2 hours, and it is $99 all in, and most insurances cover it. These physicians are carefully selected by our team. They are all board certified, so we can vouch for them. And everyone we know that has used this product is just beside themselves happy. Do not go to an ER. Do not go to an urgent care. If you're in a city covered by HEAL, click HEAL, $99. Someone will be there. And people don't understand that what you really want is just a physician to use their judgment to tell you what this is. Is it serious? Is it not? The treatments are often simple. There is just simply today, unless there's a real emergency, no reason to go to the ER. And I would suggest even going to an urgent care when you're feeling bad, need help. I mean, why do that? And by the way, that's much more expensive. Sounds too good to be true. It is not. This is an opportunity. Check out the HEAL app. All right, we're back, and we have a new sponsor called
Do
Bergamet.
We really?
Yeah, Bergamet Mega. Bergamet.com is where you can find about them. And I don't normally get behind stuff like this, but I look very, very, very carefully.
Are you taking it?
No, but I've suggested to other people that they do. I was taken enough, and I don't do that normally. I was taken enough by the material they had, the research they had, that I'm persuaded that if people can't tolerate a statin, if they have fatty liver, it really has a significant benefit for those people. It's a nutritional supplement. It's called Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from a bergamot citrus fruit from the Calabria region of Italy. It's rich in polyphenols, and polyphenols reduce the risk of heart disease. Actually, the Italian government funded a bunch of research on this, and it looked the outcomes were quite good. I was pleasantly surprised. It's what you call a natural statin, or HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. Its properties do lower cholesterol. It also affects one of the more significant problems worldwide, which is the metabolic syndrome. The metabolic syndrome is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides. I have it. I have metabolic syndrome. I thought about taking it above and beyond the medicines I take, which I do tolerate. I actually asked them. I said, maybe I should take this because it might improve my insulin resistance. They were not super enthusiastic that I should. It really is for people because the data really looks very, very impressive. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended Bergamet Mega Plus. It's, again, effectiveness has been documented. Something that we're excited about. Learn more, go to Bergamet, BRGAMET.com, Bergamet.com, or click on the
Come on now.
Bergamet banner on our website.
I was just dogs are going nuts while you're down. Reading your promo. I'm just saying how we
settled down. So, Shelley, so what are you doing now?
Okay, so I'm doing so much that I can't even. I'm so busy.
All right, let's go through.
What are we doing?
Let's go through a little bit of the work history, how we, you and I got involved with Shelley.
Oh, well, yeah. I knew she Tell would be perfect. Story. I knew she would be perfect. We were at a 12-step meeting. We went to lunch afterwards, her and her husband, and I don't know if Ivy was with us. But we were sitting there.
She was.
And we were already looking for that character on the
nurse.
The nurse, right?
Yeah.
And she said, I'm thinking of going back to school. Because Ivy was going to school, you know, right?
Right, right. Well, no, I wanted to go back
school,
into the field.
So you were
going
to go back to
field.
Full-time school. And she said, could you hook me up with getting supervised hours or whatever? And when she said that, at that place on 6th Street by Farmer's Market, by 3rd and Gardner Meeting, I knew in my head, like, I could get you supervised hours and you're going to be on a TV show, little girl.
Oh, no. So we all got together on that, but then we took you from there and brought you over to Las Encinas.
That was when she came to Las Encinas first, and then we did the TV show.
Oh, was Las Encinas first?
Months,
I can't remember how it went.
Pretty quite succession.
Yeah,
it was fast. It was a whirlwind, really.
But Shelley became a key, much like I ripped Bob off from wherever I found you, Passive Recovery Center.
Well,
or
Matt,
Music Care, Music Assistance Program. Mm-hmm. Did we steal you from somewhere? Or we just
No, because
she was a stay-at-home mom, and the kid was going to regular school now. Why do you got to be a stay-at-home mom if the 8 hours a day the kid's at school?
Good times.
Right, she was six. So
hospital full of drug addicts to deal with.
Yes, exactly. I was like, but I had been in the field 97, 98, 99, and I worked for this other treatment center
that I had gotten clean.
Yeah,
they still exist.
That's where I got. Yeah, he does still exist.
So now, what are you doing?
So now I'm opening a detox center it's actually in Encino, but it's called Bel Air Valley Detox, and that is going to be in August. And now I'm working at Bel Air IOP program.
It's an intensive outpatient.
The intensive outpatient. And we have, you know, maybe probably it's been a year that they've been together.
Is there a website?
There is a website. I think it is belair.com. Belairtreatment.com, sorry.
Okay.
Belairtreatment.com. And we're doing intensive outpatient and, you know, hoping to...
They got cooking classes. I like that.
We do. We do.
These kids don't even know how to boil water, Drew.
I know.
But yeah, so we have, you know, there is a lot of basic skills because it's a young adult.
That's about basic skills.
It's
how
young
to, how
adult.
To make a grilled cheese sandwich.
Well, you Swear have to God, imagine. Drew, like,
I went there and I thought it was awesome. They're trying new things. At least they're teaching these kids how to cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
can't
even take care of themselves.
No, I understand.
We're teaching, you know, resumes and all of this, you know, types of life skill classes, how to get, you know, how to get your driver's license, how to get your GED, how to, you know, return to your neighborhoods and make a difference. You know, how do you get into your community? What do you do when you go home? Because so many of these guys are from out of state. you know, which is interesting.
And then you have a sober living attached too.
Yeah, several sober livings attached. And then, you know, they're, I mean, they're very well taken care of. They're in these, you know, beautiful houses, and then they're getting transportation, coming there for their IOP treatment. And then, you know, building new levels of responsibility and accountability. A lot of people want to stay out here, you know, because they're from places where they, you know, they don't feel like going back to, or they don't, you know, the recovery out here in Los Angeles is, you know, quite amazing,
yeah.
Especially compared to some other places, say in the, you know, in the Midwest and places where there isn't so many recovering people, and there's not so many meetings, and there's not, you know, we take for granted that Los Angeles is this, you know, we have 2,500 meetings a week, and that's not happening everywhere.
I was talking to someone who is setting up a program in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest price programs of sober living are $6,000 a month.
Well, of course,
with no treatment.
You have to move them to Queens.
It's so, even out there, then they're all state run or something. It's a crazy situation.
We get so many people from the East Coast, especially Boston, the Eastern Seaboard, Maryland. You know, the opioid epidemic out there is so profound, and they don't have the facilities on the East Coast.
By the way, speaking of which, Boston, that's one of the reasons I was so down on Suboxone, which was our buddy
Eric. He's doing good now.
I know he is. He was slamming Suboxone, remember?
Yeah. So was Scott Weiland, so was everybody.
Ugh. So crazy.
Right, but the Eastern Seaboard just is completely decimated by opiate addiction.
They had 12 deaths in 48 hours in the city of Boston from when this Chinese fentanyl hit for $3 a pill.
Nice.
Yeah, and you know, and so I'm getting these guys from
the East Coast. Orally active. It's just suck on it.
Really?
Yeah. But fentanyl's destroyed the stomach.
But so you understand that because of the economic interest of this addict population that's so desperate on the streets, because we're restricting opioids at Walgreens and CVS, the Chinese and
drug dealers.
Some people think the doctors are drug dealers. You know what I mean?
But all right, so,
sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they are. That's right. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Eric, any update on that? You know, we did this program where we treated non-celebrities. Everyone was always saying, "Boy, what are you doing, celebrities?"
Eric's like, doing great. I actually just saw him.
But we happily said, "We're happy treating non-celebrities. We have no affinity for celebrities." So we treated a whole group of very, very sick non-celebrities, and no one watched the show. Thank you, everybody.
No one's died.
Well, how's everyone doing from your standpoint?
Did you see it on Facebook? He bought his own car with his own money, saved from his job. It was just amazing.
He's doing well.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Drewby, any update on him?
I talked to him about a year ago. He was all right.
Yeah.
Still battling with the dad. You know what I mean?
Eric is doing great. Amazing.
Jason Davis, I see. He gets it together for 6 or 8 months and falls apart and gets it back together. And, you know, he's like a son, a fourth son to me or something. It's kind of frightening.
It's so funny because Bob has collected these people and nobody calls me.
Janice Dickinson did all the time.
No, she actually stopped calling me as well.
She calls me.
She calls you.
Yeah.
Right.
How about, okay. Brigitte.
Don't know.
Never heard anything from her?
No. I don't. I didn't. I haven't heard anything.
All right. We're just shooting. All right. Susan wants us to wrap up. We got to go.
Okay. What are we wrapping up?
So how are you, generally? Having good? Ivy's good?
Ivy's
Your
great.
Your daughter's good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ivy's got purple hair.
Uh-oh.
No, not anymore. No.
I thought it was purple.
It was purple, but no. She's doing great. She's at a performing arts school. She's very, very happy. She's doing very well. And
what's wrong? You both acted like having purple hair is a bad thing.
What do you mean? I do not. I encouraged it.
Shelly behaved like an antisocial. She wasn't actually one. You are actually one. So it looks much more appealing to you. So thank you, Shelly. Thank you. Thank you for being
here. All right. Thank
really
you. Thank you so much. Good to see you. Thanks.
See you soon.
Bye.
Yeah. I gave you my heart. And unlike most dudes that I know, you took your time with and you did not tear it apart. I appreciate. You know my value when you would let me depreciate. Me letting other dudes do that was my mistake. But I never held that against you. I never could, I never would. I still got a hard
this
time saying it too. But I love you.
Every girl's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through.
When I met you, you were perfect. High class, without designer purses. You had so much purpose. From the VIP to churches, had me searching, that's for certain. Okay, maybe not the churches, but I remember being on Rodeo searching for some churches. Chicken, we was bumping Mick Jenkins, had me thinking I was perfect at a time when I only felt worthless. Yeah, you pulled back the curtains, and I know this shit ain't tact, but baby, you've been hurting, and I know that shit for fact, cause damn it, I've been worried. I'll listen, no hurry. That's when you opened up to me. You said when you were, he made you, and that shit fuck with me. I swear to God, that shit stuck with me. I felt I couldn't help you, but luckily.
This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through, yeah. This is a song for every girl who's ever been through something she thought she couldn't make it through.
You would not let me look down upon myself. Never cared about my pockets or my family wealth. Cause my name was just a name. To you, I was not just another dame. Not just the number one on your list, but I was the list. I was the Yeah. I thank you. It's a God love that's coming from your heart. And without it, my love for you can never start. You healed me cause you feel me.